right now we are turning to a situation that we don't hear too much about here in the United States. The nation's attention is focused squarely on the dire conditions in Louisiana and Mississippi, but between Guantanamo Bay detainees and the U.S. military have prompted 89 prisoners to resume a hunger strike that was initially begun in July. The prisoners are protesting their living conditions and their continued detention without trials. Word that the hunger strike had resumed was disclosed last Thursday by Clive Stafford Smith, a British human rights lawyer who has returned from visiting clients at the base just a week ago. At least 7 detainees have been hospitalized, and Smith has been warning that many intend to starve themselves to death in order to create a public relations disaster for the U.S. military. We are joined right now by Clive Stafford Smith, who has just returned from Guantanamo Bay. Thanks so much for being with us. Welcome to WBAI.
Good morning.
Now, you have just returned from Guantanamo Bay. We don't hear much at all. Tell us about what you saw while you were there.
Well, I have to preface whatever I say by saying I can only talk to you about the unclassified material because, you know, what my clients tell me, however innocuous, is classified until the U.S. military says you can talk about it. That said, there was a hunger strike, and to be honest, it's been a long time coming. These guys have been held for over 3 years with no legal rights at all, and contrary to some of the public statements of the military, the treatment they receive down there is horrendous. I mean, to give you one example, when the Republican congressman came out saying that they're getting fed fantastic food and showed this plate of lemon chicken, you know, you don't know whether to laugh or cry. Being English, I can tell you about bad food, and the stuff they eat down in Guantanamo is horrendous. And beyond that, the physical abuse of the prisoners, of course, is far more significant. So they'd gone on a hunger strike, and
can you tell us a little bit about the physical abuse?
Well, you know, for example, you've got one of my clients, Omar De Guise, who was beaten up by what they call the EARF team, the Emergency Reaction Force, and they EARFed him, and they sprayed in his eyes, and they gouged his eyes with their fingers, and they left him blind in his right eye. There's another of my clients, Sami Al-Laythi, who was beaten up by the military personnel. He's now in a wheelchair with 2 fractured back, you know, vertebrae in his back.
And on what grounds is this, during questioning?
It's all part of the process. Unfortunately, what you see with even the public statements that are made by the military, they talk about breaking people. Now, they deny physical abuse, but I'm afraid there's so many corroborated stories that one can't take that seriously. But they do admit to trying to break people down, and that's the whole process of Guantanamo Bay.
So one of your clients is blind and another client is in a wheelchair.
There are many others. I mean, I've got a juvenile client whose name I can't reveal. He goes by the initials MC, who had a cigarette stubbed out on his arm. And all of this is part of the interrogation process. And that is very, very wrong. It's really un-American, and I speak as an American, too.
How many juveniles are there in Guantanamo, do you know?
The U.S. military says none. That's false. We've identified at least 20. Now, when the military says these things, they say it with a straight face, and they've redefined juvenile as someone under 16, where there are even people who they seized who are under 16. The MC, the kid I talked to you about, was 14 at the time he was seized. Now, today, as we stand today, I think all of them are now 18. And again, the military says, oh, it's okay now, they're over 18. But that's, of course, wrong. You can't illegally arrest a juvenile, hold him illegally for 4 years, and then say everything's okay because he's now over age.
I wonder if you can talk to us a little bit then about the process of interrogation, because I think that's something that you have documented even just at the point of when clients or prisoners are brought out of their cells for the interrogation.
Well, I never thought when I went to law school in New York back in the early 1980s that one day I would be having a little checklist of how my clients were being, you know, tortured or coerced by our own soldiers. Unfortunately, that is what's been happening. And it goes back before Guantanamo. There are many people, of course, we've heard about Abu Ghraib. and we know about Bagram. One of my clients, a British refugee from Ethiopia, Binyam Mohammed, was taken by the CIA in a plane. We've got the flight logs. We can prove it, to Morocco, where he was tortured with a razor blade taken to his penis, for goodness sake. And then when they get to Guantanamo, some of the most extreme things, the most extreme tortures, I don't believe are done in Guantanamo. We outsource them to the Jordanians, the Egyptians, and the Moroccans. But even in Guantanamo Bay, there's a lot of physical abuse. There are people who, they use all the manipulative processes where they bring women in there, but they also use physical violence. And this has been stated over and over again.
I wonder if you can talk a little bit about this hunger strike. Now, where we say that the doing it as a public relations disaster for the U.S. military, but the fact of the matter is that if we're not hearing from you today, we wouldn't even know this was happening. I wonder, have there been other deaths in Guantanamo Bay that we haven't heard about, and do you think we'd hear if prisoners died?
Well, I think you put your finger on a very important point, which is that if a tree falls in the forest, no one notices. And this is part of the problem of secrecy in Guantanamo, is that you don't hear about these things. And until we got lawyers in there about a year ago, you wouldn't hear anything. I think part of my job is to legitimately get facts out of Guantanamo through the process so you do know. And what we face right now is a real disaster. Because you've got the military on one side who are pig-headed. They're not willing to negotiate with anyone. They say, we run this place and no one else can talk to us about it. They refused to even meet with me when I was down there, when I was trying to help them come to some sort of reconciliation. On the other side, you've got 502 prisoners who have been deceived so consistently for the last 3 years. To, give you examples, when we first got lawyers in there, the first thing that the military did was start sending interrogators in pretending to be lawyers just to try and sow more discord and more lack of trust. So the prisoners simply don't trust the military. The military won't talk to the prisoners. The prisoners have got so desperate now that they're on hunger strike. In July, I can tell you, because this was declassified last week, some prisoners came within a very short time of starving themselves to death. And what we're going to see this time is it's going to be a lot harder to stop. It stopped last time because the military made promises of concessions and treating people consistently with the Geneva Conventions. But if such promises were made then, they were reneged on. And now, if promises like that are made, no one will believe them. So when people do what happened to Bobby Sands, you remember him from the Irish Republican Army, when the British interned people without trials, and he went on a hunger strike, and he starved to death. And this resulted in the end of internment in Ireland, because the British got such terrible publicity from that they couldn't carry on. And the same will happen. Yes, they may cover it up for a few weeks. They may get people not to know about it. They may not even tell us the truth for a while. But the truth will ultimately come out, and that's going to be a disaster for the U.S. as well as for the prisoners who starved to death.
With so much negative publicity when we do hear about Guantanamo Bay, is there no kind of moves by the U.S. military that you're seeing to even rein in their behavior?
Well, I think there are efforts being made, and I think indeed that if we finally give them credit where credit's due, I think the Bush administration's recognized that Guantanamo is such a catastrophe that they want to close it down, but they've got problems. They've held people there for 3 years, and many of those people are not terrorists. I'll give you an example. Sami El Lathy, who's an Egyptian, the guy who I told you about, who was beaten up, who's now in a wheelchair with fractured vertebrae. Sammy, after 3 years of him insisting, hey, I'm just an English teacher, the American military found at his tribunal that he was telling the truth and that he was indeed innocent of being any form of enemy. Now, the problem is that Sammy goes banging on about democracy and says that Mubarak, President Mubarak of Egypt, is corrupt. And so Mubarak is going to persecute him if he goes back to Egypt. The U.S. government desperately now wants to get rid of people like Sammy because they realize it's making him look bad that they've held him for 3 years without a trial and now finally admitted that he was innocent. But they want to send him to Egypt. And if he goes to Egypt, he's going to get tortured. We sued them over that, and just yesterday I got the judge's order where he said that the military can send them to Egypt, which obviously will appeal. But the Bush administration is now desperate to close Guantanamo down, but they painted themselves in a corner. And we've got to actually help them get out of that corner because they've got all these refugees there who can't be sent home without being tortured.
Let me ask you, we're speaking with Clive Stafford-Smith, who's a legal director of justice in exile, and you represent 7 clients at Guantanamo Bay.
A lot more than that, I'm afraid. I can't do it competently, but I represent a lot more than that.
How did you come to represent clients in Guantanamo Bay?
I brought, along with Center for Constitutional Rights and some other colleagues, the original lawsuit back in February 19th, 2002, when Guantanamo was established. Because I think, you know, for anyone who sits back and looks at it, it was obvious then that it was going to be a disaster. You don't say you're going to fight a war for democracy and the rule of law, and the first thing you do is take people to Cuba, for goodness sake, and deny them any rule of law. That's hypocritical, and it's just going to make people hate you. So we brought that lawsuit on behalf of British people, and do I detect an Australian accent there? Was one of our clients was Australian.
Yes, that is an Australian accent.
I thought it might be. So we brought that back in February 2002. It took us 2.5 years to get the U.S. Supreme Court to rule that lawyers could go to Guantanamo Bay, and since then, I personally have just been trying to help as many people as I can.
And what's your access like once you're in there? Because if we didn't want lawyers in the first place, now the courts are forcing us to provide lawyers. Is it a tough job for you?
Well, I never focus on myself.
In terms of representing your client.
It's hard to get the job done. I mean, last time I went down there, the first thing some military officer with sunglasses on did was threaten to arrest me because they say that I was behind the hunger strike. I certainly don't have such control over Guantanamo Bay, but I think that there is a very us and them attitude in Guantanamo. I was told one time I was there that we lawyers were the enemy, and that's totally wrong. We're there to support the U.S. Constitution, as one would hope is the U.S. military.
And are most people inside locked up, do they have representation?
Not nearly enough. We now have authorization for over 400 prisoners, but we're dependent entirely on volunteer lawyers. And so only
so each prisoner would have to be cleared to get represented?
They have to actually ask for representation. This is part of what was so difficult in the early days was we had to get family members to ask us to represent them because we couldn't ask the prisoners because they were being held incommunicado. So, you know, I traveled around the Middle East trying to meet with family members to get their permission. And gradually we've got permission from almost all the prisoners, but we don't have enough lawyers yet to represent them all.
And why is that?
Well, it's not an easy or a cheap business. You know, you have to get a security clearance, you've got to be American to begin with, and then you've got to be willing to fly to Cuba and potentially fly to the home country of the prisoner. And you've got to remember, every single person in Guantanamo, except for the Australian David Hicks, every single other person faces the death penalty. So these are potentially very complicated long-term cases. I think they're a great privilege to be able to do it, but many people view it a little more in terms of the cost.
Just as we wrap up, Clive Stafford-Smith, this hunger strike, it's now, how close would you say people are to actually dying?
Well, we're talking that we're at least 20 days in, and if you don't eat food, people begin dying after about 45 days. And in the Irish hunger strikes, the first person died at the 46th day. Now, if you stop taking water, which some people perhaps might do, then you die a lot quicker. And so this is desperate, and this is why I'm so grateful to you that you're making it known to the people out there, because we've got to get the U.S. military to see sense and to treat these people as human beings.
Have you been able to get the message out on other American media?
Not enough yet, because we haven't got enough of it unclassified, but I'm hoping. You know, we just sued them again yesterday over it, and I'm hoping that that we'll get more facts out and more people to recognize that there are better ways of dealing with democracy than starving people to death.
Okay, well, Clive Stafford-Smith, we thank you so much for your work and for bringing us the update, and we hope to hear from you again in the next few days just to keep us posted. Do you have contact with the detainees when you're back in England?
No, not at all, unfortunately. That's what's so desperate.
Mm. How will we get information, or how will you get information about the hunger
strikers?
Because
I've submitted a bunch of stuff to be declassified, and the question is whether the U.S. military and the U.S. Department of Justice will allow that stuff out into the public forum, or whether they're going to continue to censor it. And I'm very much hoping that they will allow it to be public. And if not, I hope you guys will sue them.
Okay, we'll try. And for a kind of a week or a 2 week update from Guantanamo Bay on the health conditions of those on a hunger strike, how do we get that?
We're trying to get. I mean, you can call the military and ask them. You won't necessarily get the truth, unfortunately. But we also have lawyers going down there all the time, and so it's a rolling thing. And we try and get information unclassified as quickly as possible.
Okay, we want to thank you so much, Clive Stafford Smith, Legal Director of Justice in Exile, and we will hope to speak to you again soon in the coming weeks.
Thanks so much.